Hi, it's DGAF. And this is season 4 of Sessions. Let's get it this year. Let's save the princess, right? Happy Friday to everybody. Week 22 of 50. The Undertow. The Jeb Beach Interview, Part 1. Early in the pandemic, I interviewed Trevor Savage of Raising the Nuts. So, obviously a podcaster, and he's also a vlogger, and he's also a world-class professional poker player. And I asked him his favorite thing about doing content, because I knew it wasn't, I knew it wasn't for the money, because he makes a lot of money playing poker, and you just don't make a lot of money in content unless you just keep your foot down for a very long time. And he said the best thing about content to him is getting to know people that you otherwise wouldn't get to know. And when he said that, that just rang true in my ears right away. And he actually proved to be an instance of this. I didn't really know him. I was just interviewing him, and then I got to know him much better during the pandemic, and met up in real life, and he became a friend. So he was exactly right. And another instance of this is my guest today, Jeb Beach, an actor who lives on a tiny island up near Vancouver, and he's just got a great vibe in the DGAF community, which you know, this week is about, right? The Undertow. It's about this force I've always felt below the surface pulling me away from the good in life, right? And well, now there's a force pulling me towards it, and that's all my supporters, patrons who make up DGAF community, and Jeb's a very big part of that, and he's fun to play with in the DGAF home games. He's just got a great vibe, and he's just cut from the same cloth as Trevor and myself and pretty much everyone else in the community. And he's also, I mean, he just goes above and beyond, right? Because he's a supporter of this podcast, and he's also got me doing some marketing, where he started an Instagram page for me, and he's doing sound bites, stuff I just never would have time to do or know how to do. And yeah, he's just a really cool dude, and I wanted to interview him this week in particular because it's called The Undertow, right? There's the one that's always held me back, my demons, if you want to call it, or my self-destructive ways, or my vicious cycle. Just whatever you want to call it, you know, just pulling me away from happiness and success. And it pulls me away. The closer I get to that stuff, the stronger that force gets. And that's been true, you know, since I was probably 15 years old. But lately, I started feeling another one, as I just mentioned. And, you know, I'll continue to mention, because that's how I learn stuff, is I just kind of belabor it. And it's this community, DGAF community. And the interesting thing is Jeb Beach called this shit way back, just after the community started forming. He said, this is going to be the real story of Sessions, right? Like, sure, the hand histories are fun, and the character descriptions are fun, and the struggle is inspiring. The resiliency for sure is inspiring. The sacrifices of father, all that, right? The third rise in life in poker, that's all great entertainment and whatnot in the short term. But bringing communal people together from all over the world and proving to the world that not only is this the most fulfilling way to live, you know, two-way streets in every relationship, paying it forward often and paying it back always, being about the group instead of yourself, yeah, not only does that do wonders for each individual's heart and soul, but it's also super functional in humanity. Anyways, we'll see if I interpreted what Jeb said way back when correctly. And anyways, enough of my spew. Here he is, Jeb Beach aka Fast Actor in DGAF community.
There he is.
Hey, man.
How you doing?
Not so bad. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm recording. Yeah, it's all set up.
Yep.
Do
you want me to record too?
If you want.
Nah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So I messaged you just a little bit ago, or you messaged me. You would just want a nice three-way pot. What were you playing?
I was playing PLO.
Yeah. Where were you playing?
On another club that I don't talk about too much in the thing, because I don't like to like kind of push out to other people. Yeah, this is another club that seems to be based out of Texas, and a lot of action.
Nice. Well, that's good. So you're in a good mood as we go into this interview?
I am in a good mood, yeah. And it's also not because my wife and kids are away for a month.
Oh, they're gone for a month. You said they were leaving. Yeah. I didn't know for a month. Wow.
Yeah, for a month. So, you know, it's day two. A month will get weird after a while, but it's day two right now. And it's literally like, it's the second time. No, it's the first time in my life that I've been like alone without somebody tapping me on the shoulder for something.
Yeah.
You know, since we had our kids, it's crazy. I'm just like, I think like since before my wife moved here, since I've just been alone for a while. It's weird, man.
So you'll probably enjoy it for a while and then start to miss the hell out of everyone.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's already weird at times, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I have a little agenda for this interview, and you saw it. Let's start with your current status. So many of the listeners already heard the first time I interviewed you, and they just know you from the community. But what's your current status? How old are you?
47. Yeah.
Yep. Same. How does that feel, man? Do you feel like you're getting old?
One thing I'm actually in the best shape of my life. I've been going really hard and taking that stuff seriously for the first time in my life. So in a lot of ways I feel younger, but I'm cognizant of the ticking clock of life right now. You know, like I'm cognizant that there's like, man, there's only like X number of years left to like be earning or enjoying time with family or whatever. All of that is becoming real, you know? So I guess in that sense, you know?
When did that start for you? That like mortality realization?
I think it's a slow emerge, man. Don't you think? Like it's, I couldn't say. I'd say in the 40s somewhere. 40s, second, third kid, somewhere in there. Maybe I remember on my like the day before my 40th birthday, so I was 39. I remember I was like picking up one of my kids, and I have one of those just like stupid little like cricks in the back, and then I was laid out. My wife has a picture of me. I'm like just lying down on the floor and I can't fucking move.
Well, so was that like a turning point for you in the, because I'm 47 as well, and I think about it like almost daily. Like I need to get the most out of my life. It's not a midlife crisis. It's just a intentional living life to the fullest, which I just didn't do prior. It wasn't gradual for me. It just kind of came on in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, but don't you think that is just like your own manifestation of what a midlife crisis was? Some people call it a midlife crisis, but has a negative connotation to it. Isn't it just like the shock of like, isn't that what a midlife crisis is? I don't know. I don't really know the psychology behind it, but that's what I think. Like, holy shit, I'm halfway through. And so like, you can look at that like glasses half empty or glasses half full, you know?
Yeah, I guess there is a negative connotation of midlife crisis, and it's, I'm going to start living faster. For me, it's been the opposite. I'm going to slow down a little bit. I'm going to be just a little more chill and try and enjoy myself. But yeah, I had this conversation with David, who many of the listeners know, my psychiatrist friend, and he talked about, it was probably 4 years ago or maybe five, and he talked about mortality and how it haunts him sometimes. And I was like, what are you talking about, man? Like, I've always known we were going to die. But at that period of time, I didn't have it. And now I have it. Now I understand exactly what he was saying.
Yeah, man. I think that's it. I think also part of it comes from like, as you get a little bit out of survival mode, then you can start to see what you're missing. You know, like when you're in the shit and you're just going nonstop to try and build something, or whatever, it's, you can't really look outside of that, you know? And then because it consumes you, because you think you're in survival mode. You're just thinking about hand to mouth and how you're going to take care of this and whatever. You don't have time for it. But once you start to have a little bit of space, you can start to see what you're missing. And like, I think it's important not to be kind of like down on yourself if you become aware that you've been in that, like not paying enough attention, and not be like, holy shit, I got to stop doing everything I'm doing and radically change. But like, I think it's a gradual make time for the appreciation of things, you know. That's definitely happened for me through COVID.
Yeah, like, that was a pretty mature conversation we just had about this.
What do you want? We're a couple of old fucking 47-year-olds, man.
Growing up, man. Yeah. So you're 47-year-old dude. Where do you live? I know it's somewhere weird and awesome in Canada.
So it's basically Vancouver, right? Like I live on a small island, which is like a 20-minute ferry ride from Vancouver. It's called Bowen Island, B-O-W-E-N, Bowen Island. So it's a 20-minute ferry ride, and it's kind of a suburb from Vancouver. And it's like, it's about the size geographically of Manhattan, but 35 to 4,000 people live here. So it's like tons of space, and you know, every home is somewhere near the ocean and all that. It's cold ocean though. It's not like you're gonna like just go, my kids will jump in there, but I ain't going in. It's cold, yeah.
Does it get warm or no?
Yeah, they might go up a little bit, but it's nothing like my kids are in Florida right now, that's really wet, and like it's nothing compared to that. Like, so yeah, you go in the summer every once in a while. It's a good Wim Hof kind of fill your bones kind of thing.
Yeah. So you've mentioned your kids a few times. How many little beaches you got running around?
Well, I got four now. Last time we talked, there was three. You know, the Matilda came along, the third one there, or fourth one. You lose track. She was born in August, so COVID baby, and that was pretty awesome. Yeah, I'm just thinking about my poor wife who took four children in COVID across the border and on a plane
to Florida.
To Florida, yeah. So two flights, yeah, and like, but overnight.
But it hasn't been COVID in a long time in Florida. They just never
that's true. But from here, just the logistics of it all, man. Just crazy. You're right. Yeah.
Family, yeah. So you got four kids, and would you say your job's more an acting coach than an actor? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, by income, 100% true. Yeah. Which is like, you know, every actor's got their side hustle, and mine just turned into being like the guide to the tribe of actors, you know, but for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So 47-year-old actor / acting coach, dad to four, husband to just one, right?
Husband to one. Yeah. So far. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else just to get kind of we're not going to rewind the clock all the way back into your life story. We've already done that, but yep, just to get a snapshot of who you are, what do you do for fun?
You know, I'll let you know over the next couple of weeks as I have time for it, because there's like literally no time. I'm not even being facetious. Like, I'm kind of being facetious, but like, there is no, like, what I do for fun is I hang out with my kids. I exercise, try and get out for a walk. Like I'm not trying to be boring or drab or whatever, but like, not much fun going on. That's something I need to find a little more balance for, you know. But that said, like, my fun is, my work is fun. Like, I've the blessing to be doing this job that I love doing. Like, I help people. I joke with my kids all the time. I think I probably said this last time, but like, I help people get better at pretending for a living. Like, that nobody does that job unless they think it's fun, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that. It can be a grind sometimes, but outside of that, honestly, and I'm not being stupid, it's just like my life has been so utterly full, literally every minute, for years and years and years by adding kids and all that stuff, that like, it's probably something I need to find for myself. I don't have a good answer.
Okay. What spawned that? Sounds like you're on a health kick. What spawned this?
I think the end of 2020, you know, acting classes pause over the new year, over the holidays, right? Nobody's going to acting classes and all that. So everything pauses. So there's always like a reset at the end of the year. So in December, I didn't realize how much kind of COVID times and all this stuff, new baby, learning how to churn my business to working online as opposed to in person and make that work, all that stuff. I didn't realize kind of how much it was putting on me, you know, and until I stopped. And like, you know, when you're going like, you're going like, imagine, you know, when you're like in an airplane, you got the airplane, I think it's vertigo maybe, and you got the airplane, you can still feel like the vibes of the plane, you know?
Yeah. I can feel it getting off like a boat better than
you have a boat. Yeah. Yeah. That kind of stuff. Yeah. So I felt like that for like 2 days when the year stopped last year. Like it took me probably like a good, like one day of five hours of like concerted effort to slow down and breathe, you know, in spite of the fact that I spend all of my professional life telling people to do that at the same time, right?
Of course.
Breathe, get into that authentic voice, all that stuff, right? In spite of that fact. And so when I did that, I was like, holy shit, I became aware of how much I was really carrying just to like barrel on through, kind of from moment one of the pandemic. And I looked at the year and I was like, and I, what I do in like stressful times is I drink red wine and I eat shitty food and I put on a bunch of weight and I wasn't feeling good and all that. And I was like, okay, I got to look at all the stuff that I'm doing. I literally don't have enough time to do everything. So I need to get back to the things that build it all out. And I was like, I'm going to take the first 6 months of the year to build out financial, familial, and physical health for myself. And they're all works in progress because, you know, pandemics knocked the wind out of a lot of those things, right? It all works in progress. And so I decided to take 6 months off auditioning. And, you know, as an actor, you're looking at yourself on camera, like all the time. And you're like, you can see the sounds, Pat, you know, just not happy with
right.
the look, you know, yeah. and all that. So just like, it's time to just like start getting back to health, both for the physical look, but for the physical look of it and appearance on camera, but then also just for the foundation to be able to do everything else. And it's been really good. Like I've really taken advantage of not having to be in the commute and all that. And it's been really positive.
Did you pause drinking or quit drinking or just cut
back? I reduced it a lot. You know, initially the first like 3 months of the year, I was just like, I'm just going to work out every day. And I didn't really pay too much attention to my food, my diet that much. I kind of indulged because I was working out and kind of built that strength. And then I stepped on a scale and I was like, that's weird. I think I should weigh less. And I was like, well, you've been paying attention to that. And then so naturally I just started to pay attention to my nutrition and that. I added intermittent fasting and all that stuff. And in like a couple months, I've dropped like 20, 30 pounds and like, it's all clicking along. But so yeah, now drinking now happens like a really nice bottle of wine once a week kind of thing, as opposed to once a night or something like that.
Oh, you're really grown up. You're a little ahead of me on that part.
It's a sliding scale though. You know what I mean? Like you never know.
I think we both are very busy. I mean, I know we're both very busy and got these pretty intense grinds and you're kind of using exercise to fuel you. And I kind of just like need to decompress, or I think I need to decompress with like, you know, indulging in alcohol and food at the end of the night. But I've been thinking about your approach. It just hasn't appealed to me quite yet.
That's it. You see, you're just a stage behind me, man. Cause
I think so. Yeah,
that's exactly what I was doing. But at the end of the day, I'd be like, I need a fucking glass of wine. That's it. Boom. And the glass of wine would be a bottle of wine a night. And then like, you know.
But then you start eating when you start drinking. Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
for sure.
You get hungry. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. So you're doing well, man. You look good. They're not going to be able to see you, but I can. And we got a decent snapshot of who you are. Let's talk about your acting before we get into other topics. What are some of the best roles that you got and didn't get?
Yeah, you gave me that question and it's such an interesting question because it's weird because the roles you didn't get, you really work to get them out of your mind, right? It's like bad beats and it's like missing. There's so many parallels in audition life to poker grind. And I think that's one of the reasons that I'm attracted to poker is you can do everything right. You can be excellent and then not get the role. And then you have to learn to really let go and move forward. The same way as in poker, hey man, you get it in as an 80% favorite, you did everything right, you lose, so be it, move on, right? So roles I did get, so hang on, what's better to start with? Roles I did get or roles I didn't get? Like I have yet to book that like turning point, life-changing role. And I've been really close. That was another one in COVID. Like I had an audition toward the end. And because of COVID times, I put, I think, so much kind of stock in the potential to book this. Like it's my ticket out of all the stress and everything. Cause it'll be like, you know, some big, huge paycheck.
You know, you'd miss the grind the moment you got out of it. I know that too.
Well, Yeah, that's true. But I think the grind turns to something else with just maybe a little less stress.
You know? Right. Ideally, yeah. But I think like if you just bink something huge, like I've always, not to cut you off, but I've always thought like, man, if I win the main event this year, like all my struggles are over. And then like, it's going to feel empty. Like, I don't know, but yeah, you disagree.
True, though, but like, now you're talking about the abyss of existence and where to put, like, where to find meaning in things and where to apply things. Right. Like, and I think that the grind creates that for us, but then if you win the main event, dude, your troubles will be over and you will put stuff into good stuff. Win the fucking main event, dude. Do it.
I'll become a huge slob if I win the main event.
No. That's okay. You have time to work out. You'll be one of those
guys. I will. And I guess if you bink a big role, that means you're still going to be working hard. It's just going to be
crazy work, man. There's an old joke. Like, how do you get an actor to complain? You give them a job, because like it's once you book the job, like the work, if it's a big enough role, the work begins. But it's And it can be really, really grind. Like, it ain't as glamorous as it appears to be. Just like, you know, so many parallels again, right? But it's not. Right. Like, it's mostly, it's going to set and it's like waiting around to be in there. And you got to be fresh and on point and emotionally exactly where you have to be. And your, you know, memory has to be on. You have to be ready for all kinds of different egos and you have to adjust. And like, you might be working with somebody who you can't stand and you have to be in love with them or like all those things, right? Mm. So, it's always a grind, but like, I'm like, it beats a fucking day job. Like, you're still paying me to pretend and say words, right? Like, that's what I'm getting paid to do. Okay.
I've come to realize some of us just weren't cut out for like regular day jobs. We just have to have something different. Yeah.
Always known that for sure. I agree.
So you do talk about all these parallels and you're right. And I've always called them turning points. Like, if you're going far in a tournament and if you double up, you can make a lot of money. If you don't, you're going to bust and it's going to be, the money's not going to mean anything. And same thing in huge pots. So what are a few of the roles that could have been big turning points? You said you haven't binked any, you've bricked them all, okay. but
let me stay emotionally strong for this one, man. Cause that's,
but, what, you know what though, you might be better off for it. Like that's,
No, for sure. I'm being facetious, man. It's good. You do learn to just like let them go. Okay. So here's a really memorable one for me. That, you know, okay, so think about like the macro idea when you're grinding along and you're like, you're trying to get there, man. If I just stick it out and I just do the work and I add up and I show up and I do it right, my opportunity is going to come and it's good. And I got to keep that tension out of it. And I just got to play the game right. It's totally poker. I got to not think about recovering my losses. I got to just play the hand correctly. And it's the same thing. But that said, I think that's theoretical and not real. I don't think you can get past like, fucking when is it my turn? Especially when, you know, you're surrounded by, it's a small community and you can see friends and colleagues that are moving along. And you're like, when's it going to be my fucking turn? Yep. Right? The FOMO, the FOMO IG quote that we put out a little while ago there. Right. So that's building up. Right. And then you're like, there's this click over point where if you book at a certain level, you're now validated and proven at a certain level, you can get there. But all the while, this is a whole big lead up, like all the while, there is a community of people who are in your corner. It's casting directors, it's agents, it's directors and producers, and people start to, you gain a little bit of notoriety. It's just inches and inches, and it builds up over time. And even if you haven't booked the thing, they're still talking about you. You're still in the mix, right? So I have this audition. It was for, you know, a Lifetime MOW, which is not a huge project.
What does that mean? A Lifetime
MOW? A Lifetime. So, you know, the Lifetime channel. MOW means movie of the week. So just like, you know, any of those movies and movie of the week, I think the name goes back to way back in the old days when like once a week, ABC or something would do a movie and they're like literally every night. So it's really just a TV movie.
Are those usually depressing?
Depends. Like, I mean, it depends what you mean by depressing. Cause like, you know, Hallmark romantic comedies or the Hallmark Christmas ones or whatever.
Oh no, not like, romantic comedies. I thought Lifetime was always like, you know, Debbie Downer stuff. But
it's all the gamut. It's just,
my sample size is tiny. I have no idea what I'm talking about. It was my hunch.
They can be. They used to have like really cheesy, like just, I don't know, the pregnant woman loses her child and become and pretends to be pregnant and becomes friend with somebody who is pregnant and steals, so she can steal a baby 9 months later and weird stuff like that, right? Yeah. So like those kind of things, like the psycho babysitter and like stuff like that. But their content's maturing and it's actually some pretty interesting stuff, an interesting mix of stuff as it moves along. That said, it's like it's low budget, kind of like it has a life on TV for a couple of weeks or something, and then
everyone gets Lifetime, right? Like
And it's legit. It's a big deal, and it's like a significant role in a movie. So it would have been one of those events that kind of levels me up and shows that I can be hired at this level, right? Which would have been the number three in the movie. So there's the lead. So the movie was about a true life story about a woman and her daughter who were kidnapped and held hostage for like 40 days or something like that. And it's uplifting, a true story.
Uplifting.
Yeah. Uplifting stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And so my role was for the husband of the woman who's kidnapped. So the number one in the movie, as the lingo goes, would be the woman who's kidnapped. The number two would be the kidnapper. And then I would be the number three in the movie, which is significant. That's a lead.
Yeah.
So this, the second scene, it's a scene, and it was actually, I found out later that it was actually a transcription from the actual phone call. Of it's Father's Day and your daughter's been missing for 8 weeks or something like that. And the kidnapper allows her to call and it starts with hello, hi, daddy. And then you got to be in this, like you can imagine as a father, the emotional place you'd be in and all that stuff.
You'd be
like
paralyzed.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's gotta be full and you'd be like being strong for your kid and all the stuff has to translate. So like really scary, challenging, like bringing authentic emotionality in the audition room is for a lot an intimidating proposition, right? Because at the best of times, like I got to be able to cry on cue. So it's not a normal thing, but you got to be able to figure that shit out. So going into the room, I was feeling really kind of intimidated and then, or not going to the room, but going to the waiting room. So I went to the waiting room and I was looking at the other guys walking around and you're familiar, you know who the guys are. And I'm like, oh, all these guys, I know them. And they're all kind of like next level up from me. And I was like, fuck, I'm worried about this audition, whatever. You know, the intimidation factor of like the, you know, the pros are there, whatever. And then I looked at them and I was like, you guys are all nervous about what you have to do.
They don't have kids.
Like, yeah, kids? I guess. Yeah, maybe. No, some of them do, but they're just nervous in the audition space. And they're just like, huh. I'm just going to chill out and see what happens. And I just kind of let go of everything. So anyways, I walk in and they have a really, really great audition and everybody's crying. It was great. And then I get a call back for it. There's like me and one other person get called back for it, right? So the way the audition process, you go in for an initial auditions usually, and it's like just the casting director who sees a bunch of people and then the director and the producers and that, okay, here's the two guys we really want to work with. And that's a callback. And you go in for the callback or three guys or whatever it is. And so I go up for the callback and right before I'm about to start, the guy tells me that information that we actually have the transcript. And I'm like, oh, great. This is the director. Okay. Boom. So I finish it. So I go into it and I do it. And like literally the whole room is like in tears. And it's just like this moment, like we all just experienced it. And he's like, kind of like, oh, shaking it off. He literally says, we're not going to get any better than that. And he's like, Jad, man, he's like, I'm thinking about my kid back in, he's in from New York or whatever, back east, man. I'm like, jeez. Like, and like, this never happens. This never happens in the room. We're like, literally, like the three producers and the director got up and walked across the room and shook my hand. And they were like, that was awesome, man. And like, they're like, you're willing to shave your beard and stuff? Like, yeah, okay, good. And I leave and they're just like, holy shit. And I get out, right? And then I didn't book it. Like, because I wasn't tall enough or something, right?
Like, I was going to say, I bet you in many cases, I mean, this is just a hunch. I don't really know. You can tell me if I'm accurate at all, that it's going to come down to politics or some other agent needs a favor or is owed a favor.
I think it levels higher than me. That's true. I'm not at that level yet. You know, I think in my case, it's like the other guy looked better for the part. And that's the thing, right? Shit. Like the taller guy, the skinnier guy, the darker guy, the lighter guy, the older guy, the younger guy, that all comes into it because it's just part of the equation, right? And so what happened for that though, why that was like, it was a loss, right? But why it was a win was like, it was a little bit sad because I would have liked to have booked it. But I completely proved myself to all those people, and more importantly to myself, because that was actually the most intimidating thing I could ever be asked to do in an audition room. And I crushed it. And I'm like, well, if I can do that, then I can do anything. And then I get back to, it's just a matter of time till the next one comes along. But then I too, like, I'm at that level now where I'm that guy where I'm like, I'm the almost guy. Like, I've been almost about 4 or 5 times this year. And it's,
you've
been
made
like
4 or 5 callbacks.
Yeah. Four or five times where I'm like, this, like, it's, I'm, you recall, sometimes you're shortlisted or pinned for it. You're one or two people. They're deciding for big roles. My fair share of the smaller ones that are probably actually a net negative when you take the time off work to go do them, like financially and all that, whatever. But for like the big life changing ones, yeah,
you gotta do them to build on, right? To level up, as you said.
Yeah, well, you do. But once you've done them, you kind of don't, you know, you may, why are you doing them? You're doing them to stay sharp, if at all. Like, you're not doing them to kind of earn credentials or anything, because you've earned those credentials, right? So now it's that place where it's like, it's a matter of time till your acting is excellent and you're the right guy for the right job. Like, I've had about 4 of those where in the past little while where it's been like, this guy's fucking great. And it's like, too old, too young, too whatever. And that's hard, and you need resilience for that. And that's like, it's really heavy on you, which is why back to my beginning of the year, I was like, I gotta like give myself the foundation to take care of it. I gotta be healthy. I gotta be fit. I gotta be like not stressed on anything else. I gotta not be needing it in order to kind of have other things in my life be okay. And as life becomes bigger and bigger, because kids and because businesses are morphing and changing and all that, like that, everything else being okay is like a more complicated puzzle to kind of build, right? So
yeah. Are you more about the journey or the finish line?
I mean, the journey, I have some pretty specific finish lines, which I'll keep private for the moment, but like I have some pretty specific finish lines in my life that like I'm working towards, mm-hmm. but enjoying, but it's so, I think in theory, I think if I keep myself honest, I'm about the journey. But I can definitely get into obsessing over that finish line, and I have to make sure I keep that in check for myself, you know?
Yeah, because you seem very happy right now, and also very healthy as I've seen you. And would you be this healthy if you got that part? Like, no, you had to keep going through stuff, right? To kind of push you to like, I need to be stronger. I need to be able to handle anything. And here you are kind of in that spot.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like it's all in flux. It's all an up and down kind of thing. And there's periods. I think if I look, my consistency is like I'm problem solving and I'm dealing with what's coming at me. And I'm pretty good at being honest about it, moving on. And so moving along, I feel like I probably would have been, but I'd be a different guy with a different life experience. And I don't think my life would be that different if I'd booked that, because whatever, it would have been a nice, I don't know, $20,000 paycheck or something, which isn't going to really change lives too much, would have been nice. And that might've led to a couple of other little opportunities, but it wasn't like a star making thing. The bigger thing was like achieving to the level that like the level that would be the most intimidating to ever be asked to achieve and having done it and then not worrying about the results, you know? Feel like I get one outed a lot in these fucking auditions.
Yeah.
You know?
So it sounds like you're getting called back a lot and then running bad once it's down to you and one other person. Are you familiar with Tonya Harding at all and Nancy Kerrigan?
Sure, yeah.
Let's do that next time. Let's just cut out the variants. Just like,
yeah, that's right. There's ways, right?
Yeah, there's ways for you to get that role and not even have to fade anything. No, that's
totally true. Yeah, nah, risk versus reward. Nah, we'll leave it.
Okay.
There's a great movie about that, by the way. The Player. If you ever seen The Player, look that up. It's kind of about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Side note. Check it out.
Any like roles that became big, or any like big time actors that you lost out to in any roles?
No, not big time actors. You can get the sense, like one of the dynamics in like pilot season, for example. Pilot season is like when they're shooting a ton of shows that might go, and they film them and they decide which ones they're going to pick up and take to series. So there's kind of like a no stone unturned thing. And so you can read for leads of series and stuff like that. a lot, but there's also like a lot of, like a lot of people are doing that. So they're like, they're seeing like 500 people for a role where in the normal kind of parts of the season, they see 8 people for a role, right? So the odds are way tough. And those often, like, they just go to stars. So you can feel like, I think I lost a role to Marlon Wayans one time. Yeah, in paper, like, not, so not literally, but they auditioned.
Were in the same role?
So close, right? So, yeah, like, because I was legit. No, because it's like, that's one of those things. I think it was for like G.I. Joe, and they were like auditioning a bunch of actors or whatever, but it's already going to somebody else. So no, I've never lost out to a famous person in reality, like in theory maybe, but I haven't been at that level, right? Yeah. But I've worked with a lot of famous people over the years.
Yeah. Who are some of the cool ones, or the most beautiful ones, or the best actors?
That would be the next question. Man, no.
Have you ever had a lovemaking scene with Scarlett Johansson?
Not with Scarlett Johansson. No, I've been mistaken for it on a podcast. I was mistaken for Scarlett Johansson once upon a time. Didn't you like when I was anonymous on your pod?
Oh, yeah.
I think I was may or may not. Who I worked with? Erica Christensen. Who else did I work with? Oh, I don't know.
You work with a lot of people.
Cast of Fringe. I don't know. And then, you know, it's like, no major. Actually, as I look through, I've met a lot. I've met John Lithgow. I've met James Franco, Frida Pinto on when he was on Planet of the Apes. That was cool. Paparazzi was all around. It was just real nice. And
you know who you could play if they ever did a movie on his life is Luke Perry. You know who that is?
Oh, yeah. Luke Perry, we're the same age, bro. Come on, man. I know who Luke Perry is.
I mean, I don't know. Like, what you like? You live on some cool little island. Like, maybe you guys don't watch 90210. I don't know.
You know who I met? Who, like, here's what? Fuck, I gotta think of his name. Okay, everybody, this is great. Poker in Rounders. You remember in Rounders the two Russian guys? Just Jax. You said Just Jax. Those guys. Do you remember?
Yes. Yeah.
So I worked with Just Jax, Maurice or whatever his name is, right?
The guy who so wanted fresh blood or whatever.
Yeah. Those guys, right? So I worked with him, and he was on, because he was like, I forget his name, but he was like one of the main stars on ER eventually, like a major, major big deal. So I worked with him in a scene where like, he ends up like, I'm like a doctor, and he kind of like, he's looking for his father. I'm trying to calm him down. He kind of manhandles me a bit. But when I first met him, I'm like, hey man, you're super nice. And I look at him and I go, Just Jax. And he's like, what? I don't know what you're talking about, man. And I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? Like, that movie changed my life. So I'm talking about Rounders, and he's like, oh yeah, my line for Rounders. She's like, dude, that was like one day on set I booked in New York when I was just getting started. That's right. People always ask me that character. Ha ha, I didn't even remember. I was so heartbroken, man. Just Jax, but every poker player knows what I'm talking about.
Of course. So if you binked one and then became one of these big names, would you have, what is the name of your firm, your acting firm?
It's called Jeb Beach & Associates, JBA for shorthand, people say. Would I still teach? Yeah, absolutely.
You would?
I would.
Flourishing like it is now?
I think it would. I think it would be flourishing perhaps differently, but I don't have any intention of ever stopping teaching. Like, it's one of the joys of my life. It really is. Like, it's like, I'm so humbled by the idea that I get to help people get good at something, and it blows my mind that I'm good at that. I just don't want to, it would be great. Like, if I didn't have to depend on it for money anymore, you know? And if I did, if that was going to be the case, then I would get like I have a grandiose vision about what I'm building out with JBA, and it got sidetracked, and we're getting back to it. But like, part of it is to push the business model forward so that classes can be free, you know, like, and there's ways to do that, and like monetize in different ways and stuff like that.
Yeah. How do you monetize if they're free?
Well, there's, you know, online subscription models and things like that, like low cost, large reach subscription models, stuff like that. And a lot of that started to really, really come into practice with all the teaching on Zoom. Like, I'm able to record, and like, I'm working on getting that stuff out. And so, that is kind of the idea. Like, eventually it could start with, there's one class that gets covered and then a couple more, but yeah, so that would continue. And, you know, as I'm building out this studio, like, as we were getting to the shutdown, I was on the verge of getting all my provincial, right, provincial provinces versus states, provinces in Canada, right? It's like a state. So provincial certification to be an accredited full-time school, and basically I have a whole staff working where I'd be doing less. And then obviously that kind of turned away. So that stuff's all there to kind of rebuild and build forward, and it will. And yeah, so like if, and then that frees up space to get back to the stuff that really matters, which is like acting's a joy for me. My kids are a joy for me. And you know, building things is a joy for me, I suppose. But yeah, I would never stop teaching. It's one of the great loves of my life, for sure.
Nice. A couple weeks ago in sessions, I had a week called Keep Going. And mm-hmm. It might be, by the time this comes out, it might be 3 or 4 weeks, you know, before this is released. But it was called Keep Going, and that was the theme of the week. And it was, you know very well what I was talking about, when it just seems like you're on this impossible grind. You've either dug yourself a huge hole like I did, or you just take on the world like I think you did more than dig yourself a hole. And you have a plan and it's grandiose and you're working your hardest and you feel like you're a talented person. And you're just not getting there, right? You're just not really making any ground up. And what I remember, what I took from the first time I interviewed you, and just in our interactions leading up to it and after it, was just keep going, right? And I've heard it from several people that have made it. You have a nice acting firm now, and you are a little bit more relaxed financially than I am. But the thing you just said is just keep going. And I've heard it from many people. Let's hear about your keep going stage. How did you get in a spot where you had this incredible, you know, mountain to climb in front of you? This, I guess it's like the Sisyphus stage.
If you will. Yeah. Well, you know, like a full disclosure, you asked me this question before an extent, and my initial response was honest, and it still is now. Like, I honestly feel like I'm still there. Like, I honestly feel like I think I was about to be free, and then pandemics and then whatever. And I honestly am working through it, but I am relaxed about it. I have more means than that, but it is a grind, and I'm still like, I'm not on the other side of that. And I am very much in a just keep going kind of space. But I can look back, and I've had 5 or 6 times in life, I've had the rug kind of pulled out from under me. A number of different things. And I think each time that happens, if you don't die, you learn to learn to embrace that, and you learn to proceed forward. And that's what happens. And this is going to suck for a while until it doesn't. You have to keep going. And so the biggest one was, and we touched on this last time, so we don't have to go back to major deals, but the biggest one was I had started another studio with somebody, and we parted ways suddenly. And
that's right.
And yeah, and I was kind of feeling very, where my head was at that time was I was very much in doubt about my value as a teacher, because my kind of reputation as a teacher was tied to him, and he was more established, and so it was easier, like, I'm only working with him because it's a way to get to the guy, you know. And I was very much in doubt with my kind of business savvy and acumen, because our business wasn't doing well as a pair, right? And so I was in a really, like, so there's like the short story of getting to that place where it's like, fuck, what do we have to do? And I had to go, and like that month I had to go and borrow $6,000 from my parents in order to get my family through like December, that scary month of nobody's been acting classes and all that. And like, it really, really seemed impossible. And I remember, I told you this last time, it's just such a moment, right? I remember looking at my wife in the eye as I was going into town to go on like one acting class together, and the sea was black. And I was like, it's gonna be our darkest time and our finest hour. And it has to be our finest hour. We have no choice. So like, you know, the support of my wife in that moment, with 2 kids at home looking me in the eye and just saying like, we got this. That was the beginning of it, knowing that we had each other and I could start going, you know?
You need someone, you needed an adult to believe in you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not just somebody, and it's like, it's different when it's like your mom or somebody, and no disrespect to my mom, she's wonderful, who believes in me, but like my wife has stake in the game, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Like she's putting her money where her mouth is and is believing. And that's a little bit, that's a little like, all right, I can do this. And then having no choice, man, having no choice was how I learned to keep going, because I have kids and I have to go and I have to do the grind, and my wife being in on it with me, being like, yep, go. And I would be, you know, off this island and I would go into town and I'd be alone. I would be sleeping on my mom's floor for 5 days a week and just into the studio and like just going and going and going and grinding these days out. I think that became really normal for me, you know? And it had, so I started to, so that became really normal for me and it adds up to success. And I remember people just being like, holy shit, this guy works so hard. It's just like, you work so hard in the beginning, it's just go. And I think for me that attitude of just working so hard, it spilled forward even when the success started to add up and it started to add to kind of bigger success. And then, but through all of that, like, there's so many times when you're just like, I don't fucking know if this is going to work. And I don't know, man.
I hope you enjoyed part one of my conversation with the one and only Jeb Beach. Tune in tomorrow for part two, where Jeb will clarify what he meant when he said the real story of Sessions is DGAF community. All right. Until then, peace. I hope you enjoyed this drop of Sessions. If you are a patron, thank you. And if you're not a patron, well, I don't know what to tell you. Huh? Princess, I'm doing the outro. And that's a lot of stuff. Princess, I know. We're trying. Larger than life. I guess I'm going to need some help then. Princess, I hope the listeners go to patreon.com/DGAF poker player. Because otherwise...